The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, the show that proves no one stumbles upon success ever. With your host, Lou Need. Every Mondays and Thursdays, we deliver cold hard evidence behind the power of a robust morning routine. Get ready to be transformed by the renewal of your mind.
Welcome to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast. My name is Looney Lewis, and today you are in for a treat. I have the one and only Paul Edwards here, international best-selling author, host of the Influencer Networking Secret podcast. And he is here today. He is a professional business coach and a mastermind leader. Paul, welcome to the show.
Looney, thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
My pleasure. I'm looking forward to hearing all about your morning routine. I know you have a book that came out 2 months ago, back in March, I believe, Business Beyond Business. And I cannot wait for you to tell our listeners all about it. So let's start right off. Tell me about what makes you so successful. What does it take to wake up and be Paul Edwards day in and day out and be the success that you are? What's your morning routine?
Well, I'll say that I know I'm still learning some parts of it, but I know more about it now than I ever have. And that's really the object of the game. So the first thing I want everybody to understand is that this is not a matter of either you know it or you don't. It's you know more of it progressively as time goes on. So I want to do a little hat tip here to a friend and mentor of mine by the name of Craig Ballantyne, because it was reading his book, The Perfect Day Formula, that really gave me the impetus and the inspiration to do this kind of thing. And what Craig explained is that we, because of the age we live in and the anxiety and the various internal turmoil that we all experience, many of us go to bed with too much on our minds and wake up with not enough sleep to deal with the next boatload of stuff that's going to be on our mind. And the way he said to deal with that is to begin your morning routine the night before.
Oh, interesting.
So this takes some self-discipline and some new habits, right? But the bottom line is what you end up with is a routine that very comfortably and in a very practical, deliberate sense, delivers you to get a good night's sleep so that when you wake up early, it doesn't take you 2 hours just to shake the cobwebs off. And that way, immediately, as soon as you rise, especially for me, it takes all of about 2 minutes before I'm fully alert. You are springing into action with whatever you've set in front of you for the next day. And I can talk about the particulars of it. I can map it out for you. I mean, I do it every day, so I have it memorized backwards and forwards. But that's really what we're trying to do, is we're trying to change how the clock always seems to be working against us. Not that we take control of the clock. The clock goes on whether we agree with it or not. But we don't want the clock working against us. We want to work with the clock, right? We want to use time to our advantage.
Right.
And so what's rare in today's world is for everybody you talk to, oh, I'm so busy. It's been so crazy. And I'm among this tiny minority of people who say, you know, actually, I have a lot of margin in my life. I have a lot of time to think.
Because you have prepared. There's preparation that you put in place before. And I've actually never thought about the concept of a morning routine beginning the night before, but it makes perfect sense. I unconsciously, I know I have to work out, be up at 4:30, and my workout is at 6 a.m., I tend to prepare, like lay out my clothes before I go to bed, because I don't want to scramble in the morning. I don't want to give myself an excuse to not follow through, to not actually make it to the gym because I'm too tired. I don't feel like looking for my clothes right now. So it's a good thing you mentioned that, because I don't think I've thought about it and our listeners have thought about it. So please go ahead and elaborate on that a little bit more.
So in my case, I have what's called a high idle brain, and you probably have this too. And it's where you can't shut it off when you lie down, right? And,
yes.
And you can't shut it off even when you want to, even when you say, I just want to not think for a while. You still think. So what I found was, on any given night, I know tomorrow's coming and I've got this, 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 and this to do. And what Craig told me to do was to do a nightly brain dump. Right?
Okay.
A brain dump is basically writing out on paper, or you can do it in a online in journal if you want to, but you're basically spelling out, this is what is on my mind right now, right? That's one category. This is other stuff I know I have to get to tomorrow. That's category number two. And then this is stuff that is on the horizon. It's nearby. You know, it's probably 2 weeks to maybe a month out. And if I wait until the day before to think about it, it'll be too late. So I have to pay attention to that.
Right.
Right. But the main thing, the most important part is, first of all, getting what is currently whizzing around in here and won't shut up onto paper. Because once it's on paper, it goes to sleep.
Yes.
Right. Because now it's received the attention it wanted, can't complain anymore and say, you're not paying attention to me, right? The next thing, obviously, is that you know, if you manage your calendar well, okay, tomorrow I have this happening. So I've got a doctor's appointment, or I've got a sales appointment here. I've got a conference I've got to attend. The kids have got a dentist appointment. Whatever it is that's happening, you want to spell that out on paper and say, here's the hard time, right? This appointment is at 1 o'clock. So that means I'm traveling to get there by 12:30, you know, to allow time and all that.
Yeah.
And you just block that time out. And that way your calendar is full. Your calendar has very little white space on it.
Okay.
And I color code all of my appointments, because that way I know, okay, this is a family thing. This is a business thing. This is a personal thing. This is, you know, whatever. This is a networking function. This, you know, the time is kind of looser. But when I first started doing this, I literally had my calendar filled wall to wall, no white space, because I was training and disciplining myself to be in this constant state of operation. So the first thing I do before I go to bed at 9 o'clock every night. Almost without fail.
Same here. 9:30. Got to be up early.
Yeah. So, you know, around about 8:30, I would sit down and dump all of the stuff that's whirring around in my head. Hit the hay, 9 o'clock. I'm an amateur competitive bodybuilder. I train 4 to 6 nights a week. So I sleep like a baby, right? I eat the most nutritious diet you possibly could. And I train muscles the way that makes them want to sleep at night. Then my alarm goes off at 4:30. And by 4:35, I'm in action.
Wow.
Now, these days, because I'm trained and this is relentless way of living for me, I get to be a lot more loose with it than I used to, because it's habit. It's ingrained. It's not even up for debate or question or, you know, turning off anymore. So the first thing I do when I come downstairs is my wife commutes to her job. And so I prepare her lunch and breakfast for the day, because that way when she gets up, all she's got to do is she takes both meals with her. So that way she just grabs them out of the fridge and she can go. So I do that. And then I get to spend probably 90 minutes to upwards of 2 hours sometimes in the presence of God. I'm just sitting there. I'm praying, meditating. I have journals. I write devotions. I read books, especially books that are centered around the faith and becoming, you know, advancing in Christ-likeness and maturity. And so that usually takes me till about 6:30 or 7 o'clock, which is around about the time my two boys start to wake up.
Yeah. Tell me more about the devotional and meditation that you take place. What's the benefit of that? Because a lot of entrepreneurs seem to focus on something positive in the morning, first thing in the morning. Les Brown say it. Zig Ziglar says that, right? You get up, listen to something positive, listen to something inspirational, read something inspirational for the first like 10 to 15 minutes of your day. What are the benefits of doing so?
Well, I think first of all, for me, it comes from the recognition that what the Bible says about us as creatures is fundamentally true. And that is that we are not self-sustaining. I know that's an unpopular thing to say for some people, particularly the so-called self-made people. But I happen to believe that inspiration, redemption, rejuvenation, and renewal of your mind has to come from an external source. Because if it was truly within our capacity to do that for ourselves, then we would have long since overcome all of the dysfunction and destructive behavior patterns in our lives.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right. Anyway, that aside, I don't want to press anybody too hard, but that's where I think it comes from. And whether you believe that or not, this principle still holds true, even if you're not going to go to the Bible. If you're going to go, for example, to just inspirational literature, if that perks up your soul and you begin to get new ideas from it and you get reminded of why you're doing what you're doing, the principle is still going to hold true. Right.
Right.
So for the temporary purposes, it doesn't matter where you go. But yes, do something inspirational, something that brings you back to your identity, who you are, and, you know, where you come from and where you want to go.
It gives a sense of gratitude. Be thankful for where you are. Be thankful for today. Be thankful for what you have. And so you can actually continue to attract those things. Because the first 8 minutes really sets the tone for the rest of the day. And if you start in a negative mood, that will be the rest of your day. That's the format for laid out for the rest of your day. But if you are positive and you have an attitude of gratitude first thing in the morning, and it also transcends for the rest of the day to actually set that. You start in a good mood.
Correct. Yes. And Lunit, if I may say, you're talking to a man who spent decades dealing with depression, anxiety, addiction, anger, bitterness, envy, pride, all of these internal issues that I rejoice that so many more people than used to be are willing to come forward and discuss this. Mm-hmm. And I insist on being a part of that conversation because I know how angry and sullen and bitter and resentful I would begin my days back before I did this. And so that's the reason I do it. It's not religious duty. It's not, it's if I don't do this, I'm going to end up the same miserly, angry, bitter, you know, never do well that I was.
And you don't want to go back there.
I don't want to be like that.
Ever.
Who wants to step down and degrade themselves, right? Who would raise their hand and say, yep, me, I want to degrade myself. I want to make myself even worse than I already am. No,
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it.
Absolutely. You have one topic that you are an expert in, and it's one of the questions that I want to ask is why pride, envy, and anxiety and self-identity and self-worth is so prominent to entrepreneurship.
Let me put it this way. There's a famous list of seven deadly sins, and number one is pride. And I believe pride is number one for a very good reason, and that's because all the others flow from it.
Okay, yeah.
So if you're prideful, it's very easy to drift to envy, gluttony, greed, you know, lust, and all these other things, because pride is as distinct from vanity, right? Pride is your opinion of yourself. Vanity is what other people think of you. So if you're proud, you think, I know everything. I am better than that person. I understand this issue better than they do. I'm smarter than that person. And then you get into vanity. Now you're worried about making sure that everybody else thinks of you as highly as you do of yourself.
Sounds like a narcissist.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've dealt with both of those. I've suffered with both of those. But pride is at the core of it. And the place I really had to come to was struggling endlessly with being internally, I never showed it, but internally, I was offended when people disagreed, didn't take me up on an offer, didn't want to know me, not maliciously, but just we just didn't jive. And I would just take offense to that. I'd say, why wouldn't people want to? And it, in some ways, yeah, you know, everybody wants to be loved and everybody wants to be appreciated and everybody wants to be included. That's the human condition. But there's a point past which if you keep insisting on that, you're venturing into pride. You're saying, I'm too good to be precluded from this. I'm too good to be left out. I'm too relevant. And the truth is, no, that's not it at all. If you want to be included in a group, if you want to be welcomed, if you want to be appreciated, the true path to that is through service. As my friend Lawrence McNair says, if you want to make $1 million, provide $1 million worth of service and you'll make $1 million.
That's right. Success is on the other side of service, of servicing other God's children, is servicing other people. And there's no other formula. There's no other way around it.
Correct. Exactly. All of the other stuff. Envy is an important thing to understand because a lot of people conflate envy with jealousy.
Right.
And actually, there's the reason we use two different words for it. Jealousy refers to wanting what another person has, right? I'm jealous of that person's talent. I'm jealous of that person's possessions. I wish I had that. Envy is saying, since I cannot have this person's talent, since I cannot have this person's possessions, since I cannot have this person's luck with the opposite sex, I'm going to bring them down to my level. I'm going to destroy them and seek opportunities to wreak havoc in their lives. That is a very dangerous place to be.
Ouch.
That is, oh my goodness. And I've been there. I've been there. That's why I do what I do. That's why I wrote the book I wrote. And that's why I coach the way I coach. You know, it's great to earn millions of dollars and provide service. But if you're nursing this stuff on the inside, all that money's going to do is amplify what an SOB you are on the inside. And I'm telling you right now, I don't want to go there.
I applaud you. It's hard to admit that you've been that person. You've been that destructive, not just to yourself, but to others, right? To want to bring others down. If I can't succeed, no one else can. And to live in that darkness, that must be scary.
It is. And, you know, you mentioned anxiety. I had anxiety my whole life. And I never could figure out why. I was like, I'm worried and I don't even know what I'm worried about. You know, I'm anxious and jittery and there's no reason to be. I would be afraid of people who weren't upset with me, that somehow they were upset with me. All of this led to my compulsive and addictive behaviors. You know, you're trying to medicate it. And really the problem is on the inside is what you believe about yourself.
Yeah.
And where you see yourself in the world. It's a very dangerous place to be prideful and envious.
Yeah.
And to be exalting yourself beyond measure and then be totally unable to prove it by commanding the kind of, I don't know, political power or monetary power or just the applause of people in general, because there's the evidence you're not nearly as important as you think you are. And there's a squat you can do about it. You know?
Right.
And, you know, the funny thing is, like, now in hindsight, I see this so clearly. But when I was in it, you couldn't have told me any of it. You know, you have to, a lot of people, not everybody, but a lot of people, certainly I had to come to my wit's end and say, I'm getting to a point where there's nothing that I really want to live for. You know, nothing I do is successful. Nothing I do yields the result I want to. And some people get drawn into suicide that way. I was fortunate to have become a believer, but now church and my faith seemed hollow. I wasn't getting what I used to get when I went to the house of God. And so it was time, as it becomes time for every man and every woman, to dig deep and excavate your soul and your character and find out what's really lying beneath the surface.
I find it, even myself, my story, I've been in that state of mind. And a lot of people, we don't know that we are in it. You're absolutely right. We don't know how we got in and we don't know our way out.
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes challenging daily to maneuver life, to have those meaningful relationships and connections. It life becomes very challenging.
Yes.
You mentioned you are a man of God and the word says, be anxious about nothing. Be anxious for mm-hmm. nothing, but in supplication, bring everything forward to God. And we tend to forget that. I forget myself.
Mm-hmm.
The value of that I am taken care of. My life has been ordained. I have a higher power who's overseeing, guiding my every step. My steps are ordered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think a lot of people aren't taught by the church or by anybody else how that is played out in real life. It's one of those things that you hear from the pulpit, but nobody tells you how to do it. And for me, if I don't have a language to articulate that, because you and I are both communicators, you might be able to relate to this. I found myself paralyzed in that I didn't understand the thoughts that I was thinking weren't always for me. And so I thought it was me thinking that.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was a form of warfare and that I could talk back to it. And I didn't realize, because I hadn't really understood, nobody had ever shown me the concept of authority in the kingdom of God. I'm just thinking all this stuff and thinking, well, I guess it's just the way I am. I guess I really am an envious, spiteful, lustful, bitter, sour person. What else are you left to conclude if you have no category for it?
I'm glad you brought that up, because this is a passion of mine. You're saying you are not your thought. You're saying you're an observer of your thoughts. You're saying these are happening, but you have the power to actually gain control and actually control those thoughts or change them, for lack of better words. Dr. Daniel Amen has a theory, calls them ants. We all have ants. We have automatic negative thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And same thing that you are saying is these thoughts that are destructive, these thoughts that are sour and bitter and just straight out rancid, they are not who you are. So gotta learn to see them, observe them, and actually grab a hold of them. And changing your language, because the power of life and death, you know, is in your tongue. And so if you have those thoughts, you are able to say, you know what, I'm not a negative person. I am blessed, or I am healed, or per se, I am triumphing, I'm victorious. That can start to change your energy.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember one time, this is long before I understood it, but I was feeling guilt and accusation one day. And I just, out of desperation more than anything, I said, you know, the accusation was, you're a lousy Christian. You're a lousy believer in God. And I said, I am not a lousy Christian. The devil is a lousy liar. That's who's lousy, you know?
Yeah.
And it worked, but I didn't have the category, so I didn't pursue that. I did it mainly because I was so tired of hearing that accusation. I'm sorry for shouting on the podcast there.
I love that. You responded, and you responded with such victory, conviction. Like, I am not those thoughts. No, I'm not lousy. That's perfect.
Oh, and point the finger back. Is it no?
The power of the word I am. Anything that follows that word, I am, you become. Well, Moses says, I am that I am. So anything, I am ugly, I am this, I am depressed, you will begin to attract that to your life, into your being. But if you say, I am joyful, I'm smiling, I am happy today, I am a great communicator, sooner or later, that will become your truth. And I just love that. And just being able to just notice, because we are processing 60,000 thoughts a day. And they are the same thoughts from yesterday. They are the same. And if they're negative thoughts, you have a tape playing in your head.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. One of my mentors is Dan Locke. You may have heard of him, the king of high ticket sales. And his expression is scratch the CD.
Yeah.
Right. You take the CD that's playing in your head and you just take it and you take a sharp knife or scalpel or something and scratch it and then throw it on the floor and stomp on it. And it's helpful.
And begin a new recording. Is any of this, the anxiety, the depression, the self-worth, the self-identity, how is it helpful in entrepreneurship? How can it be helpful? How can it be detrimental?
Well, this is all foundational to the principles that I outline in the book, because if you approach entrepreneurship from this mindset, in other words, you in a perpetual growth mode. And by perpetual growth mode, I don't mean you're just learning new information. I mean, you're actually doing this deep soul surgery and getting below the surface and rooting out those problems and eliminating them and establishing new ways of thinking. Then a lot of what I write about in the book is going to follow. So the book is aimed at my client avatar, which I call the radically generous entrepreneur. So this is usually somebody who, to a greater or lesser extent, has dealt with a lot of those primal issues, right, that we've talked about up until now. Even though I was wrestling with a lot of those same issues while I was doing this, I spent 6 years in the insurance business and doing just a boatload of networking and building relationships. Even while that was happening, I was being educated by what was failing, because I had enough knowledge to say, okay, that thing I just tried with those people didn't work. So now let me back up a step and see how would I approach this differently. Especially in 2014, it was when I first tried being in a mastermind group, and it was in a mastermind group specifically for insurance agents, but it gave me new ideas and took me in new directions. And I started to build an entire personal brand that I could market around the clock in the age of social media. And I developed this reputation and I became very successful. And I started to attract what you would call local celebrity clients, right? So people who were politicians, people who were prominent, people who were very well recognized within the community. A lot of them held their insurance through me, through the offices that I worked at. And I did this through all of these steps that I outlined, right? So, you know, you read chapters like Become a Magnet, Not a Pusher. And this is basically the whole concept that everybody sees right through the whole pushy salesperson thing now. So don't even try that. And I only say that because I've already gone and tried it. And I can tell you, it doesn't work, right? Pushier and the more insistent you get with people, the more you're trying to just shove your product or your service in their face. Well, I don't know about other parts of the country, but here in Western Washington, that just does not fly. People just shut down, they well up, they build a wall, they won't talk to you, they don't want to be associated with you, nothing. And you don't want that. I mean, first of all, it's rude. It screams desperation. You know, what I observed was just what we talked about, rendering $1 million worth of service up front to the people around them. And in return, they reaped $1 million worth of, they had accumulated their own unpaid sales force. Mm-hmm. These people went out and recommended them and they didn't have to do anything. They just sat back and waited for business to flow in. So I decided that's what I'm going to do. And by the time I left the insurance business, I was working on 100% referrals. I didn't advertise. I didn't go out and do events, mainly just showed up to networking groups and had conversations. Then I'd go back to the office and my phone would ring.
So, and you share a lot of this on your podcast, The Influencer Networking Secrets. And we'll put a link down below so everyone can tune in and find your podcast and listen in for those secrets, because they are valuable to know how to network. Mm-hmm. Because it's not just handing over your business card and that's it. It ends there. There's follow-up steps and different ways to actually connect with people so that you leave an impression.
Yeah. Well, so chapter 3, I talk about that. It's called pro bono publicity. So what you and I are doing right now, Luni, what's intrinsically valuable about this conversation is not so much that you and I are having it, but that potentially millions of people can hear it and listen to it, right? So millions of people, that's what makes music and conversation, intelligent conversation, so incredibly valuable. That's why video is viral on, viral videos are just worth their weight in gold and then some. Content that can be reproduced and shared with audiences a million times the size of its original audience. That's what makes performers and entertainers and athletes and all that the most successful, well-paid people in the world.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking of musicians. I was thinking of artists and models. I was thinking of motivational speakers. I was thinking about Tony Robbins, because they are reaching millions of people, and therefore they're getting paid because of how many people that they are serving and giving back to. So it's fascinating. I want to talk about, you mentioned the mastermind. And we know Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich, talks about mastermind and the importance of masterminds and getting in a mastermind. Tell our audience, what is a mastermind and what are the values into being a part of such a leadership group?
I learned this from Rabbi Daniel Lappin, so I don't want any credit for it.
That guy.
Yeah, he's great.
He's spirituality and business. He gets it. He nails it.
And he does it with these references that I've been reading for the last 18 years of my life as a believer and never noticed. So Jesus tells us to be salt of the earth. And in Leviticus, God tells the Israelites, every offering you bring before me, you must sprinkle with salt. And when Lot's wife turns around and looks back to Sodom as God is destroying it, he turns her into a pillar of salt. And I was asking a friend of mine last night, I said, why salt? Why not paprika or flour or Italian seasoning? It's a wonderful, it's a wonderful flavor. Why not Italian seasoning? And what Rabbi Lappin explained is that salt is actually the combination, it's a compound of two elements that by themselves are toxic and deleterious to our bodies. So if you consume sodium or chlorine by themselves, they can potentially be poisonous.
Oh, yeah.
But you bind them together and they become very nutritious. And look at how many different uses we have for salt, right? It's not just for seasoning your food. We can put it to treat water. We treat the roads with it in the wintertime. The point there is that human beings are designed and intended to collaborate with each other. People were forming that salt bond, and solving problems and deepening relationships and deepening ties.
That's powerful.
And so when you ask, what's the importance of the mastermind, it's very much the same principle. It's putting more than one human brain working on the same problem at the same time in the same direction.
Right. And I love the way you put that is two heads are better than one. And it's the power that comes together. It's almost when you're in unison. You are one goal. You have one vision and you are working with somebody else. And therefore, it's the universe opens up. Opportunities open up.
Yeah. Just as the Bible tells us, right? A twofold. Two hands are better than one, and a threefold cord is not easily broken. It just means that we have the power to multiply the impact and effect we can have on any situation, on any problem we're trying to solve, when we refuse to do it alone.
You talk about the generous entrepreneur, right? The radical, generous entrepreneur. What are some of the characteristic traits that make up that?
Excellent question. Well, so for starters, there was that monastic heart, right? And that's basically the be a magnet, not a pusher. So there was a personality profile thing a while back that instead of putting people under a certain label, attempted to establish a lens through which to view them, right? To view their actions in any given situation. And it basically broke down to three categories. A person's behavior and their mode of relating to people, their style of relating, could either be called move away, move towards, or move against. The move towards people are, the warm and fuzzies. These are the people who are very much about their attachment and relationship to others. And it can be a wonderfully beautiful thing in that they bestow identity, they bestow value on people, but it can also be destructive. It can be excessively needy and hanging on and I'm only okay if you're okay and that kind of thing, right? But this, when I talk about the monastic heart, I'm talking about developing your ability to move away, right? I'm talking about not being pushy. I'm talking about being kind and pleasant and cheerful and polite and helpful, but never asking for anything in return. And that's the monastic heart. That's the heart that says, no, I'm just like you said, I'm provided for, I'm protected, I'm blessed. I don't need anything. I don't want anything. I'm just here to serve. You know, if I actually provide something that you need, you can ask me for it and we can have that conversation. But for right now, I'm not here to do that. Next one I say is not for profit is for profit. And this refers to charitable and civic leadership. This is putting yourself out there, either in the form of exhibiting and exposing a talent, or even just participating with it. Participating in, supporting, donating, giving time, talent, treasure, lending a hand to people when they're serving on boards or volunteering with an organization, exhibiting a genuine curiosity, connecting them with people who can help them procure the resources and the people that they need, is a tremendous way to put yourself front and center in front of, let's face it, an awful lot of entrepreneurs are those board members. And sooner or later, they're going to need help with whatever it is you do.
That is valuable, even to me, even for me right now, as I am starting off, is how do I pique interest and do it early? That, so this is helpful for me. Thank you for sharing, because I'm learning as I'm listening here. I want to actually talk about vision. How to articulate vision, how to pursue it? And is it something that you can pursue? You know, we know we can't pursue success. It's a byproduct of service to others. So what? Tell us about vision and how to pursue it, if at all we can.
Love this concept. And it's actually very, very new to me. I heard people talk for years about vision, and I didn't understand what they meant. Because again, it's just like the when we talked about earlier, having the spiritual language and the category of warfare and all that. It was a platitude that a lot of people talked about from a stage, but they never spelled out what that meant.
Ah.
And more importantly, I personally believe if you're in the kingdom of God, you don't come up with the vision. He comes up with the vision, right? And he's pretty clear about that. If you search the scriptures diligently enough, you know, he's talking all the way from Isaiah to Revelation. I'm going to give you a new name. God gave me a vision for my life, and I only vaguely understood that it was a vision at the time. He wasn't just talking about my personal life. He was talking about everything, my business, my ministry, and my personal life. Here's the corresponding part. I got this from Ron Carucci, TEDx speaker. He's got a book called Rising to Power. It's wonderful. You should read it. Ron said to me, whenever I ask an entrepreneur or a CEO, what is your vision? What is your unique value proposition? What is singular about you and your company as distinct from the 100 other companies that do what you do? I get, you know, their profit and loss statement. I get Costco placed an order. I get, you know, all this stuff, which is all very interesting, but it's not the vision. And the reality, because the reality is they don't know. They don't know what their vision is. They haven't thought about it. It's not a category. They're like me. They don't know how. They hear it. They think, yeah, it sounds pretty cool, but I don't know how. From what Ron told me, he said, without the vision, you can't scale. You cannot build a business according to a core vision. You can't build on that, because a lot of what you do, if you don't have that vision, is going to be just blindly flailing about in the dark, trying something until it works. And I said, oh, that's what I've been missing my whole life. Because now that I have the vision, everything that comes across my desk, every opportunity that comes to me, every single time I'm presented with a choice. I can always easily ask. I know what the vision is. So therefore, does this line up with the vision or does it not?
In Proverbs, it says 29:18, it reads, where there is no vision, the people will perish.
Precisely. And that's exactly what happens.
So vision is given to us. It's that calling. It's that still quiet voice inside of us telling us this is what we need to do. This is what we need to follow. This is your life's assignment. This is your life's purpose. Walk into it, live into it. And that comes from the divine power. As you say, how do we get to that space to hear it? How do we get to that quiet moment? I know Dr. Miles Monroe talks about the power of a vision and how we are way too busy, where it's too loud to actually hear anything for God to speak to us. How do we steel ourselves? How do we actually give ourselves an opportunity to hear God, to get a vision? What are your steps? What have you done?
Just shut your phones off. Shut them off. Don't take them out. Don't look at them. At the end of World War II, hundreds of thousands of American soldiers came home from fighting bloody, brutal battles with the Germans, the Japanese. And they came home as a tremendously optimistic post-war generation that started businesses and got jobs. And we had this huge boom and, you know, the country expanded and filled out and became the envy of the world. That was 1945, you know, 25 years later. We go and fight a much smaller war with much fewer casualties by sheer numerics in Vietnam. And we don't exactly win it decisively. And it was just as bloody and brutal for those who, you know, were killed or injured or captured. But when they came home, they were profoundly depressed. And many of them became drug addicts and suicides and homeless. And you had to ask yourself, what was the difference?
What is it? What happened?
The difference between the World War II and the Vietnam generation is that the World War II generation came home on boats that took 5 weeks to get home, where those men no longer had the Nazis and the Japanese to fight. All they could do was sit there for several weeks, and they had time to process and grieve and cry and let out what had happened with each other, with a group of peers, all of whom, most of whom who had been through the same thing. Vietnam generation was home in 2 or 3 days. Iraq generation, we can be home in 5 hours. It all points to is intervals, right? What we're talking about here is transition time.
Fascinating.
We've lost that. We've totally lost it in the 21st century. That's what the looking down at this phone nonstop it represents. There is no break in the action.
Right.
There is no time to think.
Or process anything, process emotions, process hurt. We just, it's almost like shoving it under the rug and moving on.
And now you want to get a vision.
Yeah.
Is there anything more absurd? And yet we don't even see it.
Right, right.
So at that time, that was sufficient for me getting a vision. Now you fast forward to just a month or two ago, I went on a fast. It was the first time I'd ever actually done fasting. And the reason I did it was because I kept running into this issue of being offended and hurt and upset with people. So on that fast was where the Lord showed me, yeah, you have a deep-seated issue with pride and an agreement you've made with it that you need to renounce.
You speak my language, Paul, because I too did a fast. I did a 4-day fast with just water. And it just rejuvenated my mind and my body, the mental clarity I received from that, just that peace. And I go through these fasts when I am going through a transition period, when I need answers, just like you do it, when I need to hear from God. I need to be still. And so I go through these fasts, but I still work, still have a 9-to-5. However, I come out and I just, there's this peace that surpasses all understanding that when you come out of fasting that you can apply in your life on a daily basis. It's just like you got to continue to fast. You got to do it periodically. You got to actually quiet down the mind. And actually social media just makes it so hard to focus, to actually deal with anything or process anything. The attention span, it's within seconds, right? You got to move on. And so that quietness, my fast, I came out a new woman. I felt like a new woman. I felt charged. I felt clarity. I felt like I had a vision. I was precise. I knew where I was going. And it was like a funnel directly from divinity, from directly to me, ordering my every step. It was just like, wow. That is a powerful and beautiful experience in itself. And I have a whole podcast. It's a whole different podcast talking about fasting and the benefits of fasting. So I won't get much more into it. But the fact that you, as a successful entrepreneur, incorporate that into your life, it just shows value.
I'm so pleased to hear that for you, because what I've been counseling, you mentioned the social media. Recently, I've been counseling some younger entrepreneurs that I know. They've complained of the same thing. They said, I can't seem to get a moment to focus. And I said, do you have Instagram on your phone? And he said, yeah. And I said, okay, well, I want you to try something. I mean, to shut off Facebook and Instagram for 7 days and get them off your phone so you're not constantly checking them for 7 days. I want you to be uninterrupted by them.
Coming out of my fasting, I also gave up television, watching TV shows and binge watching Netflix and Hulu and all that stuff. And the creativity that comes, the ability for me to actually write and to actually think and create content. I wrote a book last week. I wrote an ebook in a week. It took me 2 years to write a dissertation, okay? And I wake up one day, I was like, I need to write a book to follow, to go along with my podcast. And then it took me a week and I did it. I wouldn't have been able to do that not if I didn't turn off the TV. I wouldn't be able to do that if I didn't stay off the social media. Just if you want vision, you really got to focus. It kind of ties it right back together to what we're talking about, vision and the need to give, to allow time to process, to actually give yourself time to be still, give yourself time to think, for crying out loud. Give yourself time to actually take things in and experiences. And you cannot have vision without putting these disciplines in place and following these habits. And let's talk about those habits, right? Those things that you don't stumble upon success. You don't wake up and you're successful. And so what are some of the principles and some of the habits that you've had to put in place? Who did you have to become to be successful?
That's a very good question. I've never heard it asked that way before. The first thing that happened to me, what I've come to realize is to start out, as most entrepreneurs need to, by making an awful lot of mistakes. And one of the most important pieces of advice that I got, and this is to answer your question, the thing that you do when you're an entrepreneur is a creative endeavor. And a lot of people hear the word creative and they think writing, artsy, you know, paint a picture type of thing. No, it's creative whether you're doing it from the left side of your brain or the right side of your brain. Doesn't matter. So an entrepreneurship is an exercise in creativity. In that sense, you are a struggling artist from day one, right? Until you get paid properly for what you do. But my mentor at the time said, whether you're getting paid or not, if God has placed this gift inside of you, then you prepare until you get paid. You rehearse until someone says, take my money. And that helped me so much because now I said, oh, so you start where you are and you don't stop until you see somebody with their checkbook out saying how much, right? And Habakkuk tells us, the vision is for an appointed time. Write it down. But it's not happening right now.
Well put. I really like that. I want to recap. You said to prepare. Preparation is key, right? Entrepreneurship is preparing until they're rehearsed and preparing until they pay you. Paul, I want to thank you so much for your time. I've taken more than I wanted to. And thank you for sharing such great stories and such great insight. Tell us where we can connect with you. Tell us about your book. Tell us about any offers that you have.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. And there is a free copy available to everyone who listens to this episode. All you got to do is go to thepaulsedwards.com. And on there, you'll find a section to sign up for my mailing list. You'll get an email from me that'll give you a link where you can pick up a free copy of Business Beyond Business, all yours. And alternatively, if you're listening to this on the go and you don't really have time to do that, you're afraid you'll forget, I also have a text option. So you can text the initials of Radically Generous Entrepreneur, which is RGE, to the number 66866. And that'll sign you up. And my email, it's PE@thepaulsedwards.com. You can email me there and say, I heard about you on Lunage Show, and I'll get you squared away. But thepaulsedwards.com. And of course, you can find out about my mastermind programs, my coaching programs, and see some of my interviews, the podcast on there as well.
Thank you so much, Paul. Morning Enthusiast, you've heard it here first. There is a free book at the link below. I will post it for you. And you can connect with Paul via these outlets. And Paul, thank you again for coming. And I will talk to you soon.
Thanks, Luna. It's so great to be here.
Well, all right, Morning Enthusiasts. That's it for today's show. Thank you for tuning in. If you love the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, we'd love to hear from you. So go ahead and subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes or Google Play. While you're at it, tell a friend about the show. Be sure to visit bestmorningroutineever.com and our Facebook group to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover our fantastic free bonus content. Until next time.